The views and opinions of the host, guests, and callers of Radio Free ARFCOM do not necessarily reflect those of AR15.com, BBS Radio, or their advertisers. When any techniques, skills, or theories are presented, they reflect the practices and opinions of the individual presenting them, but not necessarily those of Radio Free ARFCOM, AR15.com, or BBS Radio. In all circumstances, Radio Free ARFCOM, AR15.com, and BBS Radio expressly disclaim any liability that may result in the use or misuse of any information featured in this program.
Transmission begins.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Here we go.
Let's go.
All this stuff you've heard about America not wanting to fight, wanting to stay out of the war, is a lot of horse dung. Americans traditionally love to fight. All real Americans love the sting of battle.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death.
Radio Free ARFCOM starts now.
Hello, everybody out there in ARFCOM land. This is John Gold, and you're listening to Radio Free ARFCOM. We have a great show for you today, and I'm not going to delay any longer. We have Sheriff Joe Arpaio from Maricopa County, Arizona, on with us today, and he's a very busy man, so we're going to get right to it. Are you there, Sheriff Joe?
Yes, I am.
So you were just telling me a second ago you just had a big press conference about getting 900 new deputies on the force?
No, it's not 900 new deputies. I've been enforcing the illegal immigration laws for 3 years. We're the only ones enforcing the state laws. The federal government, Homeland Security, took away 100 of my deputies that were trained under the 287G contract. So right now I'm just going to train all my deputies to enforce the illegal immigration laws.
Oh, okay. I like that. Why don't we get started here? Why don't we talk a little bit about your background, how you got into law enforcement? I understand you spent some time in the military.
Well, I joined the Army the day the Korean War broke out. Excuse me. This press conference may be a little hoarse, but 1950, when the Korean War broke out, I joined the Army, 3 years in the Army. I went on to Washington Metropolitan D.C. Police for 3-4 years, went to Vegas for 6 months on the police, and then my big career was with the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration, Department of Justice, and I spent 26 years, director in Mexico, South America, director in Turkey, the Middle East, head of the DEA in Texas, head of the DEA in Arizona, so I guess I know where the Mexican-U.S. border is. And then I retired. My last post of duty was here in Arizona. Retired, joined my wife in business, and ran for sheriff in 1992. So I've been reelected 4 times, so I'm going on 20 years.
Wow, that's an amazing resume right there. You spoke about working with the DEA for a large number of years. Can you talk about how your experience with the DEA is what you've seen as far as the change in the type of trafficker drug-wise, the type of drug traffickers we've seen come through from, say, back in the 70s and 60s to what we have now?
Well, actually, the reason I was in Turkey, I was the only agent, believe it or not, in Turkey and the Middle East to take care of the French Connection. That was a heroin operation for 60 years. In the United States, international, started in Turkey with the opium, smuggled the opium to Marseille, France, made the French heroin, went into New York, the mafia controlled the heroin trade. So we stopped that after all those years. Just by chance, I happened to be the regional director in Latin America, the top kingpin we grabbed in Asuncion. And that was dried up because President Nixon said it will be dried up. We're tired of this drug traffic. So now we don't have the French heroin. Of course, it broke out at the Golden Triangle,
right,
Far East. And now we have, I never thought when I covered Colombia that they would be growing poppy to make heroin. It's usually the marijuana and cocaine.
Uh-huh.
The cocaine seems to have taken over. Cocaine is all over the world now, not just the United States. Marijuana is still there. We have our local type of illicit drugs, methamphetamine, and I can go on and on. As far as Mexico, I lived in Mexico City, and I, of course I covered the border on that side. But now we have more violence connected with the drug trade than we had when I was there. However, we did have a lot of shootings and so on, even when I was in Latin America.
Right. Okay. So can you talk about how the cartels have gotten extremely sophisticated in the last few years, and it seems like they're a lot more heavily armed now.
Yeah, they were sophisticated when I was there, especially that French connection after all those years. But, you know, the secret is to get those ambassadors overseas, U.S. ambassadors, State Department, to put the pressure on these countries, including Mexico, and take away their foreign aid if they don't do anything. Now, we do have the president of Mexico working with the U.S. president and the prime minister of Canada, which, by the way, they just had a summit meeting. And do you know, 2 weeks after they left, what the Mexican president did? He legalized the use of drugs.
Oh, wow.
So it's okay for him to say that the drug problem is because of all the customers we have, and yet he wants to make more customers in his country.
That's just amazing.
As far as the guns are concerned, the U.S. government accuses the U.S. of smuggling all the guns to Mexico, who are using the guns to kill people. Well, I'm sure that the guns come from China and other areas, too. So sometimes you wonder what the motive of the U.S. government is on this drug situation, the gun situation, the illegal immigration situation. We just arrested 27 more illegals this weekend. Some had marijuana, but that's about 800 smugglers we have arrested under the state law, and we're the only ones doing that in the whole state, my office is. But I take all the heat. I'm the poster boy from the White House down, trying to do everything they can, investigate me, the Justice Department, and because they don't like the way I'm enforcing the illegal immigration laws.
It is interesting how you've, like you said, become a poster boy for this, how they're coming after you so hard. I just don't understand. You're elected to do a job by your constituents, and apparently your constituents like the job you're doing because you continue to get elected. But it seems like there's people in the federal government that just for some reason do not like what you're doing, and it raises a lot of questions as far as the federal government's real stance on the war on drugs.
Well, it's not just the drugs. I'm speaking, of course, on the illegal situation. We have arrested, investigated, detained 37,000. My office has, which is probably a quarter of all the United States. They don't like me going into the cities, including some mayors, doing crime suppression operations and arresting those that are here illegally also. They don't like that. They don't like me going into the employers, businesses to see if they knowingly hired illegal. Even though we 40-60% we arrest for ID theft, but they don't like that because it happens to be illegal alien. So I don't understand, but you know what? I am elected. I serve the 4 million people in this county that we know of. I'm sure there's a few others roaming around, and I'm the elected sheriff, and they're not dealing with a bureaucrat police chief who has to report to a city manager, a city council,
right,
or a mayor. I'm elected, and I think that's one thing they're not too happy with, including county officials don't like me investigating them. We've indicted two of them. So I've got a lot of heat coming my way, only because I'm trying to do my job. I mean, I didn't know doing your job would cause all these problems in my 50 years in law enforcement.
Yeah, it's amazing. One question I wanted to ask you. You touched on you're the only sheriff, you're the only county in Arizona that's doing. Have you reached out to other county sheriffs and said, hey, you know, if we team up together on this, we can put a dent in what's going on here?
I don't talk. They do their thing. I do my thing. Police chiefs do their thing. They have their own constituents. So I don't care what they do. I know what I am doing. And I'm working here for my, the people that live in this county. You have to understand that many of the people we arrest coming into this county are heading for California or New York, and we arrest them and throw them in jail. We don't turn them over to the federal government.
Right, and I think that's a great job what you're doing. To all my listeners, feel free to call in if you have any questions for Sheriff Joe Arpaio. Click the Radio Free ARFCOM tab in the upper right corner at ar15.com. It'll lead you straight to the call-in numbers. Right now we have Templar 223 from Illinois. He's on line B1. Templar, are you there?
Yes, I am. Welcome, Sheriff, to the ARFCOM show. Been a long-time fan of yours over the years. I'm curious about the Mexican situation. You're a lot closer to Mexico than I am. Do you think that there's a chance that the government down there is going to lose control to the drug lords? I know there's a lot of violence right on the border. Do you see any of that spilling over into your community and your county? Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, first of all, as far as the state, we are a border state. My county is Maricopa, which includes Phoenix. It's about 90 to 100 miles from the border, so I'm really not a border county, but those that cross that border and sneak through and come to this county, we arrest them. But you're always concerned about that 2,000-mile U.S.-Mexican border, about terrorists coming across. I'm a little concerned about violence. We've got about 4 policemen killed by illegals. My concern is that they sometimes don't know what the border is, or that they're in the United States and not Mexico, and they're picking up their bad habits and coming into the United States and shooting people because they get away with it in Mexico. So I'm concerned about that. But the violence really hasn't come across into the United States that much, other than, you know, people driving here illegally and they kill a cop and that type of thing. But we haven't had the violence we see at the border. But the potential is there, isn't it? We're not that far from that border.
Are you worried much about, like the caller asked, about destabilization in Mexico and the cartels kind of taking things over down there?
Well, I don't have all the intelligence. I do know what I read sometimes in the paper, which probably 50% is accurate. But we do know we have a lot of violence. We do know a lot of people are being killed. Juarez across from El Paso, a lot of females are being killed, not all connected with the drug cartels. Other reasons they're being killed. So there is a lot of violence in the interior of Mexico. I'm very angry that they legalized drugs in Mexico, so all the ASU students here can go to their favorite spring break area in Mexico, and they don't have to worry about just beer. They don't have to worry about drugs anymore. They can use drugs legally. Isn't that a shame that our neighbor, we've given tons of money, bragging about we work with them. The president was just there meeting with the president of Mexico, and 2 weeks later they legalize it, which is the biggest secret kept in the United States. Why isn't everybody in an uproar? Why aren't they saying, why is the government pumping tons of money into Mexico to fight drugs, and yet there's no big argument from the U.S. government about legalizing drugs in Mexico? That puzzles me.
Yeah, that is a good question. It's a recipe for disaster down there in Mexico. I can't believe that actually happened. This is the first time I've actually heard
that. You know why? They kept a secret. Heroin, methamphetamine, cocaine, any type of drug. You can, if you get caught with a small amount, you get a warning to go to some rehabilitation. You get caught again, another warning. You get caught again, well, maybe they force you to go to rehabilitation. They can't even keep records of murderers. You think they're going to keep records of the same guy busted for using drugs?
No, it's shameful. It really is.
Well, why doesn't someone talk about it?
I don't know. We'll talk about it here, though, and I'll put my voice into the mix as much as I possibly can. Scrap 5000 from New York City, you're on with Sheriff Joe.
Hi, Sheriff Joe. Real pleasure to speak with you. Big-time fan for a long time, and welcome to the radio show. I was just wondering, is there anything that you feel you can do to kind of stop the lies and the rumors, especially from this administration and from the gun control nuts, basically, that the gangs down there are getting weapons from U.S. Gun stores? I mean, anti-tank missiles and grenade launchers, things of that nature. I mean, it's really, you know, having a bad effect, I think, on legitimate people here in the States.
Well, you're breaking up a little, but I think I mentioned a little earlier that the U.S. is being blamed by the U.S. of all the guns going into Mexico. In fact, that's not true. The Mexicans are not using U.S. Guns coming from the United States. Maybe a percentage of it, but they come from other areas too. So I don't know if this is an idea to eventually crack down on weapons in the United States by saying that we're furnishing Mexico with the with the guns and killing everybody. Almost make it look like it's our fault for all the violence occurring in Mexico. I don't think that's fair, blaming us for, I say our own people are blaming us for the guns going into Mexico causing all the murders.
Yeah,
that's not fair. That's not true.
No, it's a symptom of the liberal self-aid, I think, that's starting to take over some parts of this country. One question I wanted to talk about was your Tent City operation that you have down there. I personally think it's a great, great idea, and I wish more people would adopt something similar to that. What percentage of your inmates live in the Tent City?
Well, by the way, I put the Tent Cities up in 1993. I made a promise when I ran that I would put up Korean War tents, and everybody's calling me a psychic, that I knew that we were going to double our jail population. I didn't put it up for jail overcrowding. I put the tents up to put more people in jail.
Uh-huh.
You build a hotel, people will check in. So we've been doing it going on 18 years in the desert. It's 140 degrees in the summertime. But my response to all the critics, our men and women are fighting for our country, and they're living in tents, so shut your mouth. And they do shut their mouth. They can't answer that one. But I do put the convicted people only in the tents that have up to a year to serve. The other 8,000... are in the jails waiting to go to trial. So I had room for 2,500, but now some judges, and they're not booking as many people in. They don't want to pay the per diem to us. So a lot of them are being on probation so they can commit the crime again and again. But the Tents has been a great program. I've had four presidential candidates visit the Tents running for president. They all lose. We had Dole there and Phil Graham and McCain and Governor Wilson. I tried to get Hillary here last year. She was smart. And so everybody, how can they keep criticizing the Tent City when guys running for president came down to campaign?
Yeah, I think the Tent City is a great idea. If there were more jails like that, I think it would be I know it's very efficient that way. I know that you've reduced the cost per inmate down tremendously since you've taken over.
Well, you know what? Let me be honest with you. If I was a good politician, I would brag over and over how much millions and millions I have saved the taxpayers. Although the county doesn't care, they keep messing around with my budget. but the thing is, I can't use that as a reason. Means I'd be lying to myself. If I had $1 billion, they still would live in tents and eat the 15-cent meals. No coffee, no salt, no movies. I can pink underwear, chain gangs. So it's not a money issue with me. It's a punishment issue in losing your privileges when you do something wrong in a fair way. You don't have to go through our drug prevention program in our only high school in the nation I have for juveniles. You don't have to eat steak. You don't have to have coffee or salt and all this good food. You can still do it with all this high-class food that you get in prisons.
Oh, absolutely. I agree completely with you on that. Now, I read somewhere that inmates are only allowed to watch two TV shows there at your jail.
Three.
Three? What are those?
Well, one's the Weather Channel.
Uh-huh.
And the reason, because when it's so hot here, they'll see it snowing in Buffalo and take a one-way ticket and don't come back. So that's why I use the Weather Channel. Then I give them the Food Channel. I'm sure they love it.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet that.
Our meals are 30, 40 cents a day. And then I give them C-SPAN so they can watch all the politicians all day.
Oh,
I used to give them Newt Gingrich, 10-part series on reinventing America, but since he left, nobody cares. So I give them bedtime stories where I read the story of the night, you know, men are from Mars, women are from Venus. So they learn how to, as they go off into sleep, they learn how to read through, you know, through the audio.
Oh, I love it. I absolutely love it. I understand in Arizona that the law in Arizona allows citizens to open carry firearms on their person. Is that correct?
The what?
The law in Arizona allows for open carry of legal citizens.
Oh, that's been there for years. We have a concealed weapons permit law now, 2 weeks training.
Uh-huh.
You can do a concealed weapon.
As far as the open carry is concerned, what are your thoughts on that? I've heard that you're against it from some people, and I've heard you're for it from other people.
Open, what do you mean? Carrying a gun? Openly?
Carrying a gun on your hip, yes. Oh, and
that's been there since the beginning of time in Arizona. I'm never against it.
And you have no problems about that?
No, whoever said I was against it? The legislature may pass a law the next week, or this session, that you don't even have to go and get a concealed weapons permit if you do not want to, and be checked, you know, background and all that. The only thing I say, at least learn how to shoot the weapon. I didn't say I'm against it, but you would think you'd want some training so you don't kill your kid. That's all I said.
Absolutely. Okay. Scrap 5000 had one more question for you. Go ahead, Scrap.
Hi, Sheriff Joe. I know this Sheriff Joe, this is probably very... Actually, I'm sure it's a very controversial question, but a lot of people believe that President Obama, you know, with his birth certificate, they say that, you know, first he had it, then he didn't, then it accidentally got destroyed, and they show him a copy of it. So, I mean, there's a lot of question as to whether or not he's actually a legal U.S. citizen or if he's in this country illegally. And I was just wondering if there's any talk, you know, in your office about looking into that. And maybe doing some headway,
Yeah, that's all I have to do. I got in the White House, the Justice Department, all going after me. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know why it's not made public, you know, his papers. I don't think they've been made public, have they?
No, not yet. They have not been released.
I don't understand why the secret. You want to know where I was born? I've got birth certificates. I have to give birth certificates out sometimes. Don't you have to give it out sometimes if you want to get a passport? And so does he have a birth certificate?
Apparently you have to give your birth certificate out for a lot of things unless you want to be president of the United States. Then you can give everything up and you don't have to release anything.
So I think that's puzzling a lot of people is why I guess he doesn't advertise or publicize his birth certificate. That's, you know, it's not a medical type of paper that you don't want to give out. So until he has the people look at it, I think this will always be in the background, won't it?
Yeah, it confuses me as well. He sealed up his school records and everything. To all our listeners, we have lines open if you'd like to ask Sheriff Joe a question or just compliment him on the job he's doing. I have a question. I've read different places that the sheriff is the supreme law of the county, even above the federal law because of his elected status. Is that the truth? Is that how it works? You can actually prevent federal agents from operating in your
county? Well, that's a good question. I'd have to have 50 jails to lock up all the feds if that was the truth. Let me just say that the sheriff normally maybe up in Boston or somewhere, they just serve papers. But under the Constitution, the sheriff is the chief law enforcement officer for the county. Has a lot of authority, and it's probably the most powerful position if it's used correctly. As far as blocking the feds, or at least notifying the sheriff when you come into town, of course, there's hundreds of feds already here. That's a tough question. I think there was some judge in Montana or somewhere ruled that the sheriff could kick them out or something. I don't know, but I don't think that's ever going to happen in the United States of America.
No, I don't. I don't think it would either. It'd be interesting to something. It'd be interesting to watch as an observer, though. Let's talk a little bit about your sweeps that you do when you go around. I don't even know the correct terminology for them.
Crime suppression operations. The media in the open border call it sweeps. Like I go and sweep people off the streets because they look like they're from a certain country.
Yeah, let's talk about what exactly. How do those crime suppression operations work?
Just like you go after DUIs, drugs, you have a task force. We go into an area where we know there's some crime. And also, if we come across illegals during the course of traffic stops or other crimes, we enforce that law and arrest them. So it turns out we probably in a 12-hour period, we arrest 40, 50 people on warrants and any other type of crime, and about 50% always seem to be here from another country illegally. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Must be a lot of illegals driving around this county.
Yeah, that close to the border and on that major corridor right there, it's I can imagine it's just completely swamped.
No, but they've been here for years. They've been here illegally for years.
Somebody's got to do the job you're doing. It seems to be you're the only one with the balls enough to do it right now.
Well, I'm going to keep doing it, and even with all the investigation, because I do know that we do not racial profile. I do know the Justice Department has investigated me a year and a half. They're so frustrated, they put a hotline asking everybody to call Washington that they have information on me and my people. You ever hear that before?
No, that's
on a law enforcement agency?
Yeah, so, it doesn't make sense. We've got another caller for you, Sheriff. Nick, actually from Arizona, is on line B1. Nick, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
What part of Arizona do you live in, Nick?
I live in Phoenix.
Oh, okay, outstanding. Go ahead, then. You're on with your sheriff.
Sheriff Joe, I'd just like to thank you for the job you're doing and let you know that you have way more supporters than you have detractors. We think you're doing a great job and would like you to keep it up. And you have supporters on both sides of the fence. My wife is what it would be considered a liberal, and she supports you as well.
Well, too bad your mayor doesn't support me. He's gone to the Justice Department last year, and, of course, with the Obama administration. He's flexing his muscles going after me. But that's your mayor of Phoenix. History lesson. Mayors out here in Arizona have no authority. They're one vote on the city council, and they have their tongue. So when you hear mayors, the mayor isn't like Chicago, New York, where they could hire and fire and run the city. The manager runs the city. So that's a lot of hype when these mayors think they can push at least the sheriff, an elected sheriff, around.
Yeah.
But that's not going to work.
Did you have another question, Nick? Nick?
Just want to say way to go. Keep up the good job, and you've got all our support.
Thanks. I need your support, Nick. I can't keep doing my job if the people don't support me. I report to the people, and if they don't support me, I'm history.
Well, if these guys had anything on you, they would have got you already, so just keep it up.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Nick. We have Couch Commando from Tempe, Arizona. He's on line B2. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead.
Hello. All right. Hello, Sheriff Joe. I'm a ASU student. I'm 19 years old. I'm in the College Republican Club and help out on campaigns and stuff. But I have kind of a different question for you. I'm wondering if you do NFA sign-offs for 19-year-olds.
What kind of sign-off?
An NFA sign-off?
For National Firearms Act restricted weapons, like...
Well, I do as a favor. People with certain automatic weapons, I do sign off on it as a courtesy. I don't charge.
All right.
No other police department will do it, so I do it.
All right, that's what I wanted to know. Keep up the good work.
Take your NFA form, Sheriff Joe. He sounds like he's for it. I've heard actually people say in the past as well that he was against that, but apparently that was also another lie about Sheriff Joe. It seems like there's a lot of lies and propaganda that goes on with you every day.
Oh, yeah. You can't believe it, especially in the media. They have their own agenda, and they listen to these kooks.
A little while back, you had a somewhat famous inmate there in Charles Barkley. I know you can't talk too much about individual inmates, but
Why not? I talk about everybody.
Oh, okay. How was Charles as an inmate? Was he a model inmate? Did he come in with a chip on his shoulder, kind of?
No, he was great. I went to see him. He endorsed my first book, America's Toughest Sheriff. I got a good relation. I had Mike Tyson in there. I had to be careful with Tyson, so he likes to eat ears. I didn't want all my inmates to lose their ears.
Did they both live in the tent city there?
Yeah, I told them they're going in there. I'm not going to discriminate.
Oh, wow, that's funny. That's funny. We have lines open, callers. If you'd like to call in and talk to Sheriff Joe, we have him for just a few more minutes today. Now is your chance to speak with Sheriff Joe Arpaio. In your opinion, Sheriff, aside from what you're doing and the great work that you've done there in Maricopa County, what can be done to stop this flow of immigrants and this flow of drugs? Is this a war that can be won?
Well, I've always been optimistic in my 40, 50 years of law enforcement, especially those many years around the world risking my life fighting the drug traffickers in the hills of Turkey, Mexico, you name it. My whole life was dedicated to the drug problem. I still feel that it has to emanate from the president. When the president makes it a top priority, things are done. The last president was Nixon that made it a top priority. As far as illegal immigration, I feel I have demonstrators in front of my building every day, call me every name in the book, 10,000 march down the street, led by Linda Ronstadt, the singer from Hollywood. But I feel that the people speak. If they make a big issue, like the Tea Party is getting more vocal, and like the people spoke a year and a half ago with certain senators, some very close here, wanted amnesty with Senator Kennedy. It became such a furor that they dropped it. So I think the power of the people can turn that bureaucracy and politicians around in Washington. So if people don't like illegal immigration, a drug thing, they ought to start talking about it, make a big issue, shows like yours, talk shows, get the people out there. And I think that's what sways these bureaucrats to do something.
I have a question from one of our listeners named Flyfish North NEPA. Anyway, his question is to ask you that: how do you feel about Napolitano being qualified for her position in the Department of Homeland Security?
Well, you know, she was a governor, U.S. Attorney General. She came on when I did. So she was here 17 years. We had kind of a cordial relationship until she took $1.6 million away from me last year to fight the crime suppression that the legislature gave me. So now she's in Washington. They did remove 100 of my deputies, but I did say I announced today I'm bringing 900 into the fight without the federal government telling me what to do. So we do differ on certain things, but I'm not going to back down. I'm the elected sheriff. I'm going to do what I feel is right. Whether she's qualified or not, I think she's going to learn. I told her before she left, their big issue will be to get along with the bureaucracy and the other cabinet people. Washington is a different animal than Arizona, where you got the newspapers as a consultant for you and always giving you good press. That doesn't happen in Washington, D.C.
Right. You've been a public servant for basically your whole life, serving the country, serving a serving the citizens of America as a DEA agent, serving the citizens of Maricopa County. Do you have any further ambitions to maybe run for governor of Arizona one day or anything like that?
Well, I don't want to be egotistical, but everybody knows, and I've already announced twice before, that I may run for governor. I have my big press conferences, and then I say no, so the media doesn't trust me anymore. But the governor is up now in September, and I've said again that if I'm going to run, this is the time to do it. I've already raised $1.5 million in 12 months to run for sheriff again in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
That money can be used for a governor's race. The only problem I have is I have to resign the next day my position if I said I'm running for governor.
Uh-huh.
And then that those politicians that don't like me, because I've indicted two of them, will appoint their choice for sheriff. So you know who that person will be. It won't be a guy like me.
No, it will not.
So that's the problem I have. So I got to make that big decision.
That's a tough one.
That
is a tough one. Wow.
That's right.
I can run for governor and potentially have a little bit more say so in things, but if I do that, then I ought to. Oh, wow. That's a tough one. Then you lose.
Don't forget, the governor has to report to legislators. This office is more, I hate to use the word, powerful than a governor's office. I don't report to anybody but the people.
Okay, we have Mike from Michigan on line B1. Mike, you're on with Sheriff Joe.
Hi, how are you doing? Good. I got a question for you, Sheriff. About the guns that they were talking about coming into Mexico from the U.S., remember that was quite a big deal a while back. I don't know if that's all, you know, the statistics people are saying from each side, you know, that all it's like 90% from U.S. and everyone else is saying, well, they're not counting everything. If they're not all coming from the U.S., where exactly are they coming from?
Well, I think some
like,
come
they
from
coming
China
from South
and
America,
other countries.
Or?
They come from other countries,
okay.
Not just from the United States. People manufacture guns all over the world. So
it wouldn't be surprising if a lot of them are coming up from South America as well.
Well, they're coming from everywhere, but not just from the United States. That's a scare tactic, I think, once again, to show how vicious, how bad guns are, and let's take away the guns in the United States, too. So,
the Second Amendment has not been under assault from this administration as of yet, but I have no doubt that it is on their roster of things to get done, and they will get to it. With this current administration, Sheriff, do you think that some type of amnesty bill is inevitable?
Yes. Yes.
And how would that how would that affect your job?
Well, I don't know. I just go on to something else. I lock up everybody for everything. But I think that's the big push. They may call it a different name. But in the meantime, I'm going to keep doing my job, and they're going to, once again, keep going after me. But, you know, it's a shame. I was with the Justice Department, spent my whole life with the majority, well, 19 is sheriff now, but the majority of my life with the U.S. government, federal agent, federal director, and here they're all going after me just because I'm doing my job and enforcing the illegal immigration laws. And that's sad, and I'm starting to get irritated the way they're going after me, and it's a shame. They should be giving me an award and a medal, but that will never happen in this administration, nor do I see any politician standing next to me supporting me. That's interesting, too. Where is everybody?
It's amazing to me that you can get reelected so many times, but there's no other politicians that will side with you. Your constituents want you there, and they like what you're doing, and they approve of all your methods, but every other politician in the world is just trying to put you at arm's length. It just makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, but they all come to my office. All four running for governor has been in my office asking for my endorsement. Yeah, where are they? How come they're not standing next to me on the illegal immigration? Are they worried about the Hispanic vote? Are they worried about the business people that are hiring cheap labor They don't want to aggravate those people. So evidently there's a lot of politics involved in this. We all know that, don't we?
Yeah. Politics always get in the way of good people doing the good thing. That's how it usually works. Our website, AR15.com, Sheriff, is a gun website. So I would be remiss from asking you, what weapon do you carry while you're on duty?
I don't carry any weapon.
Oh, you don't?
No, right now I'm so old, I'm a lover and not a fighter, so I can talk anybody out of dropping their gun. I'm an old-fashioned Smith & Wesson. I do have two Smith & Wesson, so that's what I carry.
Okay.
I mean, I do carry a gun when I'm in uniform. I'm
sure.
Saying I don't constantly carry
a gun. Is that a revolver?
Yeah, the Smith & Wesson, the
okay.
Real, you know, six shot.
Sure. What is your what
357.
Is your
Pardon?
What is your
they carry, most of them carry Glocks.
Uh-huh.
I do have a 50 caliber machine gun, the only law enforcement agency that has a 50 caliber machine gun.
Oh, that's
so
great.
So I'm ready for action. When I showed off my machine gun, all the media said, what right do you have to have that? I said, to shoot down an airplane. They said, only the president. I said, I'm not talking about America West or American Airlines. I'm talking about light aircraft that they train here, the terrorists, and flew into the Pentagon. So if I have to shoot a light aircraft down because of terrorism, I'll do it. And I have a 50 caliber machine gun.
Oh, I love it. I'm pretty sure I already know the answer to this question, Sheriff, but do you get a lot of death threats or threats like that?
I get threatened all the time, so it doesn't bother me. I still go on the streets. Everybody wants my picture. The one guy was a neo-Nazi. The media made a big talk about it. I don't ask anybody when they come up to me with a telephone camera. They want my picture. What am I supposed to – I'm going to have to check you out with the FBI? So I have my picture taken with everybody. That's the type of guy I am. That's why I average two speeches a day. This Tea Party, they want me to talk next month, 3,000 of them here. So I'm going to do – I talk to everybody.
Oh, that's great. That's great. You support the Tea Party movement. That's fantastic.
Well, I they're getting more important, and I feel that they're powerful because – remember I said the people decide they should make these politicians straighten out? So I think the Tea Party, either directly or indirectly, is following that philosophy, speaking out.
Absolutely. Exercising their rights as guaranteed.
That's right. They could be Republicans, Democrats, whatever. That's not the point.
Okay, so when you're ready to announce your run for governorship, can we get you on here to make the official announcement?
Yeah. Well, does anybody listen to you?
Oh, absolutely, people listen to us. I told you we're the largest firearms website on the
Oh,
on
your
the
firearms.
Internet.
I was on that magazine three times, Soldier of Fortune. You ever seen me on the front page?
I have not seen you on that, but I have seen the magazine.
Well, I've been on there three times in a row, Soldier of Fortune.
I'm going to go check that out. I definitely am.
The guy was here, the editor.
I've kept you longer than we were supposed to.
Yeah.
And I want to thank you for your time.
Well, thank you, and thank you for your support. SheriffJoe.org is my web.
That's his
website. If anybody wants to, SheriffJoe.org, if anybody wants to.
If people
want
to donate to your campaign, where
Yeah, you can, right there, SheriffJoe.org, on the web, you can see what we're doing. So I'm raising the money because, in 2012, they're going to go after me and get rid of me, I guarantee you. I wouldn't be surprised if Washington makes a push to get rid of a little old sheriff, but I seem to be a thorn in their side on this illegal immigration thing, and that's sad.
Keep up the good work, Sheriff, and thanks for being on with us.
Thank you.
We appreciate your time.
All right. Bye.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that was Sheriff Joe Arpaio, the one and only America's most beloved and most hated sheriff. Now we're going to head straight into the Box of Truth with Old Painless.
Let's open the Box of Truth. Here is Old Painless.
Hello, everyone. This is Old Painless from the Box of Truth. Today I've been asked to answer some questions that have been sent in by new AR-15 owners. But before I do, let me give you a hint about AR-15.com. The general discussion forum is kind of a wild and crazy place. The moderators there allow a lot of silliness as long as the code of conduct is not violated. And I can tell that the folks that send in these questions are probably hesitant to post in general discussion because they're afraid they might get ridiculed. I would encourage you to post such questions in the AR technical forums. I'm a moderator there, and we don't allow much foolishness. If you have a question, there are plenty of great folks that will try to help you. It's probably the best resource in the world, so be sure and use it. Let's get to the questions. Number one, why is the fit between my upper and lower loose? The AR-15 platform is an ingenious design that allows just about any upper to be placed and used on just about any lower. My old buddy T-Man used to say that having several AR-15s was like a little girl playing with Barbie dolls. You can just mix and match the parts to build a new rifle almost every day. You just push out the two takedown pins connecting the upper and lower, remove the upper and install a different one, and you have a new rifle. But this ability comes with a price. That is, there has to be a little looseness between the upper and lower. But if you think about it, all the parts that have a major effect on accuracy are in the upper. And it really doesn't matter much if the upper and lower are slightly loose. There's a device you can purchase for less than $5. They call it an AccuWedge. It's a small piece of soft plastic that fits in the rear of the lower, and when the upper is shut, it compresses the wedge and makes it fit tight. Some folks believe this helps with accuracy. Some folks think it's purely snake oil. I've tried them, and I can say that at least they don't make accuracy worse. So I'd tell you, don't worry about the rattling, but if the rattling bothers you, just install an AccuWedge. Question number two, why does my rifle go sproing? This noise is very characteristic of the AR-15 platform. The main operating spring is enclosed in the buttstock, along with a buffer for the needed weight right under the shooter's ear. When the rifle's fired and the bolt carrier group comes back and it compresses the spring, then the spring pushes the bolt carrier group forward, stripping a fresh round from the magazine and into battery. When it hits full battery, the spring will bounce a little, creating the sproing sound. It's nothing to worry about. In fact, after a while, you'll notice a difference in the sound when you fired the last round and the bolt locks back, and the spring doesn't go forward and you don't hear the sproing sound. Then you know your rifle's empty. Question number three. What's the difference in the 223 chamber and the 5.56 chamber? Well, this is a very important issue and it confuses a lot of folks. The military chambers its rifle in 5.56 and civilian rifles are often chambered in 223. In short, here are the differences as listed in the Ammo Oracle, and I'll quote, dimensionally, 5.56 and 223 ammo are identical, although 5.56 military ammo is typically loaded to higher pressures and velocities in commercial ammo and may, in guns with extremely tight match chambers in 223, be unsafe to fire. The chambers for 223 and 5.56 weapons are not the same either. Though the AR-15 design provides an extremely strong action, high pressure signs in the brass and primers, extraction failures, and cycling problems may be seen when firing hot 5.56 ammo in a 223 chambered rifle. Military M16s have slightly more head space and have a longer throat area compared to the 223 chamber specs, which were originally designed for bolt action rifles. Commercial 223 chambers have a much shorter throat or lead and less freebore than the military chamber. Shooting 5.56 mil-spec ammo in a 223 chamber can increase pressure dramatically up to an additional 15,000 PSI or more. Generally, it's a bad idea to attempt to fire 5.56 rounds such as M193 or M855 in a 223 chamber, particularly with older rifles. End quote. For any new shooters, I would strongly recommend going to the ammunition forum and reading the frequently asked questions, especially the Ammo Oracle link. There's a wealth of information there. And if you read this first, it will answer almost any question you have. Our last question is, what is the purpose of the forward assist? When Mr. Stoner designed the AR-15 system, it did not have a forward assist. But the military had always had forward assist capabilities on their weapon systems, and they wanted one on this one too. The forward assist is designed to help close a bolt if it is not fully gone into battery. This can happen with a dirty or corroded ammunition or if something causes a round to not want to go into the chamber. By hitting the forward assist, the shooter can help the bolt fully close. There's some debate about the forward assist. When I attended Thunder Ranch, Clint Smith didn't like the forward assist much at all. He said, and I quote, "If that round doesn't want to fit into that chamber, why in the world would you want to force it in there? Just eject it and chamber another round. The last thing in the world we want is a round stuck in the chamber." End quote. Some folks say, well, it might be of help in some situations. Well, it just might. So that's why many rifles have them. In all honesty, I'd probably not force a round into the chamber that didn't want to go in there. But having a forward assist on my rifle doesn't really hurt anything and only adds a few ounces of weight. Well, that's about all we have time for today. If you have other questions you'd like to have answered, just send them in and we'll try to answer them all. And then you need to go shooting, because shooting stuff is fun.
Okay, that was Old Painless with another great Box of Truth. As always, you can see Old Painless's website at boxotruth.com, theboxotruth.com, and he's got all kinds of videos out there testing the different ballistics, bullets going through different mediums, and debunking a lot of myths out there about firearms. We want to thank Old Painless for being part of the show. Right now, we're gonna go and change gears a little bit. We have Cheryl Lepsch on with us, and she is in charge of an organization called Jammies for GIs. Are you there, Cheryl?
Yes, I am. Hi.
Hey, good to hear from you. Why don't you let our listeners know what Jammies for GIs is all about?
Jammies for GIs is an organization that was set up 5 years ago. My son, who is a Marine, was serving with an anti-terrorist unit overseas and became very sick and had to be flown out of theater to a hospital. And he ended up, in the end, at the hospital in Germany, Landstuhl Regional Medical Center. And while he was there, he called me and he said, "Mom, I don't know how we're still fighting the war. Every half hour, another bus full of wounded comes in. They've just got beds lined up in the halls." And from the time he left where he was to the time he got to the hospital, it was literally days. And they leave, whether they are, you know, bloody torn clothes or whatever it may be, they leave wherever they are with the clothes that they have on and nothing more. So when he got to the hospital, they literally checked the kids in, checked these people in, and unless they were on their deathbeds, they took them by cab or bus to Ramstein Air Force Base or to the German Kleber Barracks. Now, as I said, most of them come there. They don't have any change of clothes. So the chaplains hooked my son up with a new set of underclothes, socks, underwear, T-shirt, and a used pair of camis, and from there, he was sent over to the German Kleber Barracks. So my thing was, okay, well, how are they keeping up? They're not keeping up even. They have guys with bloody torn clothes laying in, on stretchers in the hallways because they couldn't keep up with pajamas.
Oh, wow.
So I was in touch with a chaplain there to see how my son was doing and asked him if there was anything that I could do to help. And he said, "Ma'am, we literally cannot keep up with a change of underclothes for the guys, with pajama gowns, you know, anything that you could do to help us would be greatly appreciated." So it started out that I was just asking family members and stuff to, you know, collect some new socks and underwear and T-shirts. And then I had gone, it was around Veterans Day, I had gone to a school board meeting, a local school board meeting, was explaining what I was doing, and all of a sudden the kids picked up on it in the schools and they wanted to do some collections. Well, from there, after we started sending to Germany, we ended up getting a call from a hospital in Hawaii, Tripler Medical. Right now we have troops serving in over 118 countries. They're not just fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan. So whenever they get sick or injured, the first place they go before they come back to the States is to Germany. So that hospital is not only seeing our injured, but they're seeing the sick and injured from all over the world.
Okay.
So the hospital in Hawaii, most of these hospitals, the bases back in the States, haven't seen patients since Vietnam. She said, Cheryl, we can't keep up. We don't even have washcloths and towels. I said, what are you talking about? You don't have washcloths and towels. She said, no, we literally cannot keep up with basic washcloths and towels. We ended up sending out 10 boxes of stuff to Tripler Medical in Hawaii. It cost me over $550 just to mail them boxes. I was in shock when I went to the post office and they said that, literally in shock.
Oh, yeah.
And so it went from there to the USO contacting us, other medical facilities throughout the United States, NASH units contacting us and saying, hey, you know, we can't keep up with toothpaste and toothbrushes, and we've got so many guys. You hear about how many guys have been killed, but you don't hear about how many have been injured. And
which is substantially more.
Oh, absolutely. When my son, he said that there was a graph in the hospital in Kuwait that said that they had treated back then in 2004 over 30,000 soldiers. 30,000?
Yeah.
Like, are you kidding me? 30,000. But the public doesn't hear about that. And the problem is people say, well, you know, I don't understand why is the government not doing it? Well, the government says, we issued you stuff before you left. It's not our problem that you don't have anything. Well, hello, they don't have anything when they come back. And they don't have addresses, so it's not like a family member can just mail them a change of clothes. It doesn't work that way. You know, these guys are hospitalized. They're moved from facility to facility, and they have exactly what they have on them. So that's what we do, and you know, every day we say we wish we didn't have to do any more, but unfortunately, we have guys walking around without coats that have just come back from Iraq that are injured, and it's 60 degrees. These guys are freezing. They don't even have a coat. So we literally go out and buy winter coats and
wow.
ship them off to the bases. So there's a lot that we do.
For all my listeners, the website for Jammies for GIs is www.jammies with a J, JammiesForGIs, jammiesforgis.org. You can go check them out there. If people want to donate to you, I was looking on your website. Is there any way they can get tax-deductible donations to your organization?
Yes, they can. They can send a check made out to DAVA 120.
Uh-huh.
And that we're right now working on our 501c ourselves.
Uh-huh.
We actually weren't planning on doing this for this long, so that's why we went under the Disabled American Veterans Auxiliary Organization.
Which is the DAVA 120, right?
Right.
Okay.
So they help us out there, and when we've run out of money, they've been there to, you know, make sure that we've had the things that we've needed. You know, when the donations don't come in, you know, there's a lot of things going on, and now you've got Haiti, and, you know, sometimes we forget that we still have the needs here in our own country.
Sure,
so
absolutely.
My goal is to get out and spread the word that our troops are not being taken care of, you know, and it's frustrating. There should be clothes for them waiting when they get back. They shouldn't have a need for anything. They shouldn't be living in rundown barracks that have mold infested and rats. And this is what these kids are coming back to.
Yeah, it's depressing to hear that the government is not taking care of these guys that go put their lives on the line for us every day, for us. They do it for our freedom. Now, we have one of these guys on the air with us. We have Blake. Are you there, Blake?
I am here.
Outstanding. Why don't you go ahead and talk about where you were when you met Cheryl and just your relationship, what it's been with Cheryl and with Jammies for GIs.
Well, basically, I was in the Buffalo VA hospital where after I got discharged from the military. I was got out for PTSD and kind of never really recovered from it.
Uh-huh.
And there was really never any support, like, through the military. I mean, I guess it just goes to show what Cheryl just said, is the government isn't looking out for the troops. So I was up at the VA hospital for about 2-3 weeks, and Cheryl would come on in there pretty much almost every day, and she'd come with, like, games to play and stuff like that, which is really cool because when you're in the hospital there, they don't allow you to bring your civilian clothes in. They give you two sets of clothes and one towel, one washcloth, and that's it. And some of these guys have been in there for 6, 7, 8 months. And,
oh, wow.
It's really sad because, yeah, you get your doctor visits and stuff like that with your I can't even think of the name, but the doctors will come in and they'll talk to you about what's going on, like how you're feeling and this and that. And, like, I know some of the people in there, they don't want to get help, so they'll lie to the doctor, which isn't the doctor's fault. But the people that do want to get help, the doctors don't really do anything. They just kind of either up your meds if it's not good or lower your meds if it's not good enough. And there's really no, like, moral support. And I think the one thing that people need, whether you're in the military, out of the military, veteran, whatever, is need that moral support, not just from family members, because you're going to have it from family no matter what, but you need it from other people, too. And when you get people putting you down, and you get those people out there that are anti-military and they don't like the military, it kind of really brings the person's morale down. And that's kind of where Cheryl steps in, and she helps, like, all the troops out. And not only is she trying to help out all the troops that are serving in the military, but she's trying to help everybody that's out of the military. And the sad part is I know when I was in the hospital told Cheryl she couldn't go to the hospital anymore. And it's like,
oh, really?
Why? She, I don't know why, but apparently they frowned upon it because she was bringing games in and stuff for people to do, and they didn't want to help them. They didn't want her to come in there with games because they thought it was distracting.
Is that right, Cheryl? You want to talk about that at all?
I was up there not only bringing in games and change of clothes for the guys, like Blake said, that didn't have, like he said, there's some guys that are not emotionally set and are up there for months. So I would literally bring in new socks and underwear and t-shirts, clothes. I would go out shopping for sweatpants and sweatshirts and, you know, things like that. We bring in, you know, blankets, lap robes. Well, because I am a veterans advocate as well, and my son has a lot of issues, and the care has not always been the greatest for him, I push to make things better. You're locking over 20 kids, guys and girls, in one small area with nothing to do but have a 19-inch TV in front of them.
Oh,
and
wow.
They're stuck in this room. They're locked down in this ward.
That's
and
crazy.
So,
it's almost like prisoners. Some prisoners have it better than some of our veterans.
Oh,
they
do.
Absolutely do. And we've had veterans up in that hospital that have said they have been prisoners before. They've done prison time, and they were treated better. The food was better. The care was better. So me, being the morale support, I go up. I'll sit down with the guys. Like Blake can tell you, you know, Blake didn't really talk to anybody when he was up there.
Uh-huh.
And I went over, introduced myself, sat down, and I literally got him to open up to me. And I get the guys that will sit down and do that, and it's huge. It's a breakthrough for them.
It really is a breakthrough. And
because I was telling them what their rights were and I was pushing issues, they felt that I really should no longer go up to that ward because of the psychological issues that they're already dealing with. So we still send stuff up there, but I no longer am allowed to volunteer on that ward per se. I still volunteer in the hospital, but not on that ward. So, you know, it's frustrating in my part because I know that, you know, there's guys up there that really need somebody like me up there to be their voice, that don't have family to step up for them. And, you know, that's where I was going. I would tell them the direct route to go to. You go to your nurses, you go to your doctors, then you go above, to the head nurse and then the big guy. And, I don't know if that felt threatened, but they didn't like
it. But a lot of the problem with that, too, though, is they'll tell the people, oh, well, you can't go and see them. Because it's kind of like being in the military all over again. That the thing that civilians don't realize about the military is it's all backwards and upside down. And honestly, in my opinion, they need to take a look at the military and the ways that look deep and do a lot of homework on not just the Army or the Marines or the Air Force, and really take a look at the military and figure out what's going on, because there's so many people that are coming back from war. Yeah, you got the people that come back that are fine, but the people that come back that aren't fine, there's no support there.
They're really slipping through the cracks.
Yeah, they're just letting them slip through, and it's kind of like the whole Fort Hood incident. It's like the military should have caught on to that a long, long, long time ago. I mean, before anything even happened. And
right.
That just goes to show where the government is at, and they're not, they're just telling the troops to go to war, and they're not giving them any support when they come back.
How long have you been doing this,
Sheriff? Over-medicating them. I've been doing it since 2004.
Have you noticed any difference in the overall feeling or anything when the change of administration happened? When Obama became president?
I never like to talk about politics when we talk about jammies for GIs, but absolutely, there's more funding out there. There are more things that are going on. There is hopefully better care. The Buffalo VA, for instance, thanks to myself and my son pushing issues with these young kids being locked down in a ward with World War II veterans, people with Alzheimer's, people with drug and alcoholic problems, they're now in the process of building a new unit specifically for PTSD, for these younger guys where they will not be locked down. And, you're locking these kids up like they're caged animals, and then they just over-medicate them. My son goes, he's got bags and bags of medication. Let's give him one. Oh, that doesn't work. Let's give him another. Well, no. Can we please work on the problem and not, just mask it? So, we've lost quite a few troops coming back from committing suicide because the care just was not there fast enough for them. Now they're working on that. There are more people. There are more doctors. And, the care is, getting better. As far as, I have to just tell you real quick about, I got a call from Walter Reed. Walter Reed is one of the first places they go when they come back to the United States.
Uh-huh.
Our presidents, our congresspeople, and our senators go on this military installation. It's in Washington all the time. I got a call from a place called the Malone House. The Malone House used to be a hotel that housed families when their service members were being treated at the hospital. It now houses over 200 injured soldiers. And they were walking around in the middle of December with T-shirts on and sweatsuits that they get from organizations like mine. They had no winter coats. So we went out and we spent, if you go to our website, there's a picture on there of a truck, the back of the truck, jam-packed with donations. The coats are coming out. There's two guys that were outside, one on crutches waiting to go to rehab, another one sitting on a bench that did not have coats on. They were out in T-shirts. The coats they have on came out of the back of that truck. As far as I'm concerned, as an American citizen, that's a disgrace. I'm walking around warm, but the guys who are fighting for my freedom are walking around in T-shirts. And did our president at that time think that, and our senators and congresspeople, that these guys just think they're cool walking around like that? How could you not question that? You go onto that base today, I'll guarantee you it's the same thing. They're not getting coats when they get back.
Yeah.
So,
now, speaking of cults, you were relating a story to me the other day on the phone about one of your last trips to the store.
Yeah, even if I go on vacation, I'm always looking for what I can buy that's marked down or clearanced, you know, for the troops. The tearaway pants, the snap pants, I always go to the outlets in Florida and buy them out. Well, I was in a BJ's wholesale warehouse locally 2 weeks ago, and I don't know, I always look at the guy's stuff to see if there's anything marked down. Just so happened that they had men's polo winter coats that were $70 coats, clearance for $17. Did I have money to buy them? No. Did I care? No. I went and I bought every one they had on the shelf because I knew had I waited, they wouldn't be there. So I bought over 20 coats,
wow,
men's winter coats that are waiting to, you know, we're gonna ship out. But, you know, we don't always get help with shipping either. That cost is astronomical. National Air Cargo just actually shipped over 3,000 pounds for us to Brooks Army Medical Center in Texas. That's where most of our burned and amputeed soldiers are.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the number of injured is just phenomenal. And so they literally, she said to me, Cheryl, you can send me stuff every day, and as fast as you send it, we'll get it handed out. Carry-on suitcases. You wouldn't think that a soldier, especially an amputee, has to walk around with their personal belongings, what little they have, in a plastic garbage bag. They called me and they said, Cheryl, can you try and get us some carry-on suitcases? Something with wheels that, you know, these guys can just wheel and, you know, get it on the plane. So we
sure
went out, we got a donation from the UAW, Region 9, and we purchased 100 wheeled suitcases and shipped them out. So, you know, we're always looking for financial donations. We're always looking for, you know, items, new clothing items, personal care items, things like that.
Sure. Now, with a lot of organizations, a lot of charity organizations, people are sometimes reluctant to donate because they're worried about their donations getting siphoned off to administrative fees and stuff like that. So by the time it actually gets to the cause they thought they were donating to, it's just a fraction of what they thought they were giving.
Absolutely, absolutely. Every penny goes to our troops. Nothing, there's no administrative fees. You know, a lot of thousands of dollars have come out of my own pocket. You know, like Blake says, when there's guys up in the hospital that don't have family that has anything to do with them, if I don't have something in the warehouse that they need, you know, an extra large or double extra large size, I will go out with my own money and buy what they need. So everything that we get financially goes back as fast as it comes. It goes right back out to the troops. So nobody has to ever worry about, you know, any of our donations going for, you know, to pay for any, you know, extravagant things that are not going for what our troops need.
Right. I really like your organization. Once again, the website is www.jammiesforgis.org. If you want to check out Cheryl's organization, she's put a lot of her own time, her own money, and her own effort into this organization. And anything you guys can give or would be willing to donate would really help out. Now, if someone has an injured soldier in their family, someone personal to them, can they call your organization and get some help for their soldier?
Absolutely. We've branched off that we not only help the ones that are in the hospital now, but we are helping people who are out rehabbing, family members who have, you know, loved ones that are in the hospital or in rehab and they can't get to them. We have contacts with each of the facilities that will get them the things that they need. We're helping homeless veterans. We're helping, you know, veterans, not just guys that have come back from this war. We're helping veterans from previous wars. Whoever needs anything, that is what we're there to do. If we can't help, we will direct them to where we can get them the help.
Yeah, and if you don't mind me adding something, that's something that Cheryl was able to do. Luckily, my parents were there for me, like, for as much as they could. But Cheryl, I think at the beginning, she was always talking to my parents about how my parents could help me after I got out. And I think that kind of helped me when I got out of the hospital to make a transition and after I got out of the hospital. And right now I don't live with my parents, I live with my grandmother, but just the way that everything got set up after I got out of the hospital, I think Cheryl had a lot to do with that just from talking through my parents. I don't know if you remember that.
That's a huge thing. Yes, that's a huge thing because a lot of families right now are sending their young kids off and they're becoming homeless. Because they're coming back, they're turning into drug addicts, they're turning into alcoholics because they don't know how to deal with their psychological, what they've seen. This war is devastating.
Right.
And it's horrible. So many of them are being kicked out to the streets because their families don't understand. So if I can grab a family and say, hey, listen, I've been there. I have a son who I'm dealing with these same issues with. But please, be patient. This kid's not doing it because he wants to, you know, be that way. He needs help. We need to be
right there
to support them when they come back.
Right. And a lot of times physical injuries get helped and sometimes the mental injuries get overlooked.
All the mental injuries get overlooked all the time. Because a lot of people will look at the mental injuries as like, oh, well, you can't treat it. You can't change a person's mental status. Well, that's wrong because a mental injury is just as bad as a physical injury, and they need to be treated in the same class. You can't put one in front of the other. They're both serious. They're both serious.
Okay,
so
we're out of time here, Cheryl and Blake. I really want to appreciate you guys coming on. I'd love to have you on in the future, if that's okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay, once again, it's jammiesforgis.org for all our listeners out there that want to check out your organization. Right now, we're going to our Going Galt segment, and Matt Hoffman has a very, very special guest on Going Galt right now. You're not going to want to miss it.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to Radio Free ARFCOM, the home of the Black Rifle on the airwaves. The program you are now listening to is one which we'll discuss on a weekly basis everything from the principles to aid one's struggle for individual independence in the face of today's so-called progressive movement to the analysis of breaking news and its impact on our lives. I'm your host, Matt Hoffman, and this is Going Galt. Even though this is only the second episode of the Going Galt segment, I felt it necessary to take a pause this broadcast from our usual line of discussion, because today we have a very, very special guest with us. Many of you are aware of him and what he's doing. Some of you have already met him in person, and some of you will someday soon. He is someone who is somewhat of an unofficial ARFCOM mascot and is setting out to accomplish what few, if any of us, ever will in our lifetime. He is attempting to visit an ARFCOMer in every state within the course of 1 year. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome a very special guest to the program, and in my home, Opie the Possum.
Excuse me. There we go. As I was saying, good evening, ARFCOM, and a very warm, very special hello to all the beautiful ladies out there in Radioland. My name is Opie, Opie the Possum, and you best not forget it.
Of course we won't, Opie. Your trek across the nation has only just started, is that correct?
That it is. I'm currently here in the absolutely beautiful state of Colorado, home of 54 mountains over 14,000 feet in elevation, home of 75% of the United States above 10,000 feet in elevation, and the only state in the nation that is entirely higher than 1,000 meters above sea level.
Wow, you definitely caught on quickly. Where do you learn all that?
By the information desk when we went to the top of Pike's Peak earlier today.
Ah, yes. Ladies and gentlemen, Opie had the privilege of traveling to the top of Pike's Peak today, a total elevation of 14,110 feet above sea level, and the source of inspiration for the song America the Beautiful.
It really was gorgeous.
Yeah, I remember you cried a little. It was so beautiful.
Shut your fucking mouth.
Okay. Anyway, let's get on with the interview, shall we? Let's start with a tough one. Your first stop with team member Swingset in Ohio was a bit of a close call for you. From the pictures, it looks like you almost never made it out of your first state. What possessed you to take advantage of his wife like that?
Well, have you seen his wife?
I believe there was a partial picture of her in the thread tracking your progress. Yes, we have.
Well, do I really need to explain myself any further?
Okay, I suppose that's all we really need out of that question.
And then there's your wife. Good Lord, man. Why the hell is a beauty like that with you?
You know, I really have no idea myself. But, hey, I'm the one asking the questions here, so let's get back on track, shall we?
I'm just saying, you better be awake whenever I am while I'm here, if you catch my drift.
All right. Listen, you rat bastard.
Possum, I told you. You best not forget it.
Listen, do you want to make it to Connecticut in one piece? I hear they're planning a hometown shoot when you arrive.
Fine. How about your dog, then?
She eats her own poop.
God damn, man. Never mind.
All right. Look, we're running out of time. Let's just go ahead and power through these next few questions, okay?
Sounds good.
Question 2. You were taken hostage by terrorist kiddies in one of your recent trips. Seems you're no stranger to danger by now, but how did you wind up in that situation?
Broke my cardinal rule.
What was that?
Never trust a pussy. Cat.
Oh, I thought I had issues.
What was that?
Question 3. What's your favorite RFCOM legend?
That one's a tie between Fire on a Plane and Ryan's Steakhouse. Those are just both absolutely the most hysterical stories I've ever read.
All right. 4th and final question, because we're short on time. We're having chili for dinner tonight. It has no beans. You gonna eat it?
Ugh! The hell is wrong with you? I'd rather eat at Arby's. And they make Taco Bell look like fine cuisine.
That's just fine. I don't mind. More for me.
You're disgusting.
And with that attitude, just you wait until you get to Texas.
Why is that?
You'll see. Anyway, that concludes the interview of OP the Possum. But before we go, we have a big announcement to make regarding the Going Galt program.
Oh yeah? What's that? They're finally yanking you off the air?
You know what? I can't wait to kick you out of here. I should have backed out the moment I saw what you did to Swing Set.
I'm just kidding, man. Go ahead, tell them the news.
Alright. Starting next week, and barring any planned or unexpected absences, Going Galt is going to shift into a live call-in program. We'll figure out what we're going to do in advance, start a thread in the Radio Free ARFCOM forum a day or so early, and get ready to go live and handle a few of your calls next week, and every week, here on Going Galt. That'll do it for this week's program. This is Matt Hoffman.
And Opie the Awesome Possum.
For Going Galt, reminding you to keep your powder dry and your wits sharp. Thanks for tuning in to Radio Free ARFCOM, home of the Black Rifle, on the airwaves. Good night, everyone.
Okay, that was Opie the Awesome Possum on with Matt Hoffman on Going Galt. Next week, like he said, we're going to have Going Galt live every week, and we'll start a discussion thread about the topic each week in the radio form, and it should be a lot of fun. I'll let you guys call in and ask your questions straight to Matt Hoffman. We're waiting for Michael Yon to call in live from Afghanistan right now. We have a little bit of problem with the satellite phone. He's going to call us right back. Are you there? Are you there, Michael?
Yeah, I'm here.
Outstanding. We have Michael Yon on. He's a war reporter, for those who don't know who he is. You can check out his website at www.michaelyon-online.com. How are things today in Afghanistan, Michael? I guess I should say it's early morning over there, correct?
Yeah, the sun's not come up yet. It's actually pretty cold. I mean, I say pretty cold. It's probably about freezing. You know, we had a flood the night before last, and a lot of the troops had to move out of their tents because their tents were completely flooded out. So they've been working really hard to move to a building, actually, which was also flooded. So I was with them a few hours last night as they were cleaning out just, oh, so much goo, you wouldn't believe it. But the spirits are high, and I didn't hear a single complaint.
That's outstanding. We have the best troops in the world. There's no doubt about that. Where are you exactly in Afghanistan?
At the moment, I'm in Kandahar Airfield, which they call CAF, K-A-F, which is the big airfield, or the big base, you might say, in Kandahar Province in southern Afghanistan.
Sure, okay. Let's talk a little bit about your background. I like to give my listeners background on all my guests. How did you get started as a war reporter?
Well, I was started writing about 15 years ago, I'd say now. Yeah, but I came to the war in December of 2004 after a couple of my friends were killed in Iraq. One was Scott Helvinson, the Navy SEAL, a contractor who was murdered in Fallujah in March of 2004. I went to high school with Scott. And another was Richard Ferguson, who was an old Special Forces teammate. I used to be in the Army as well. He was also killed the next day, also in Iraq. So I went to their funerals, one in Colorado and the other in Florida, and started paying a lot closer attention to the war. Again, that was 2004. And I had another friend also that was deployed in Iraq, also an old high school friend. And he encouraged me to come over, and finally I did in December of 2004, and I've been sort of a fixture ever since. I'm going into my sixth year now of doing war coverage.
And you've covered both Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah, Iraq, Afghanistan, and the Philippines.
Oh, wow, and the Philippines. I know we're on some type of big push right now in Afghanistan, is that correct?
Right. A major operation has been announced. It's been in the news quite a lot. It should be kicking off in any moment now. You know, actually, these operations, they're not like D-Day. They don't have a start gun where everybody just sort of lurches forward. Creep in, you might say. I've seen some reports and heard some things that there's already some activities going on. But you know, I'm sure at any moment now that the big operation will kick off mostly in Helmand Province, which is to our west. It's also in southern Afghanistan. It's a big hotbed of the insurgency.
Okay. Are you embedded with a certain unit, or do you travel around on your own there? How does that work?
Both. Sometimes I go out alone, among the Afghans. Right now I'm with 5-2 Striker Brigade Combat Team in Kandahar, although my last two missions actually were with the Air Force. I published something yesterday about a mission I did with the Air Force some days ago, and tomorrow I'll publish something else about another mission with the Air Force. So even though I'm with 5-2 Striker Brigade Combat Team, I'm subject to going out with other units at times.
Okay. Are you armed? Do you carry a firearm when you go out?
Not when embedded. It's against the rules. For instance, when you're with U.S. troops, it's strictly forbidden to carry any sort of weapons, so I never carry weapons other than my pen and my notepad and my camera.
Absolutely. When you're on your own, how about that?
Occasionally. It's pretty dangerous out there. Actually, you know, I've never had any problems when I'm alone. The only time I've ever been shot at or attacked, which would be many, many times, would be when I'm with British forces or American forces. So, I mean, a lot of people think it's more dangerous to go alone. In fact, it's far more dangerous to be with the combat troops.
Okay. We are a firearms website, AR15.com. What do you carry when you go out? Do you carry an M4?
I'm not going to talk about that.
Okay, fair enough. I understand. Is this the situation in Afghanistan, from your perspective, is this something that we are going to be able to be successful at, or is this something that we're going to quell the Taliban down, and then when we up and leave, things are going to go back to business as usual?
I think we can succeed, but we have to come to the realization that we're not smashing teeth out here. This is like braces. You know, it's going to take a long time. It's not going to be, the war could be over in, you know, a few years, essentially over. It might dribble on with, this is a violent country, so it would probably always be violence. But if you're going to influence the country and try to help modernize it and dry it up as a sanctuary for terrorism, we really have to look at social influence as our biggest weapon. And those kinds of things take time. keep in mind, there is actually a lot of goodwill toward Americans in Afghanistan. It's been drying up slowly because of, mostly because of, accidents with, use of force, for instance, bombings that kill, civilians. These things have slowly turned, people against us, but still, by and large, most Afghans still like Americans.
That's good to hear, actually, because the perception of the average American would be that, you know, that they're over there, these wild Muslim extremists, and they hate Americans, and they wish we'd just get out of their country.
No, that's not the case. Well, with some of them, certainly it is the case.
Right, right.
But by and large, again, you can, for instance, you can go up to Bamiyan province right now, which is north of here, a couple of provinces north, three provinces north. You can go on vacation up there now. Americans are welcome. You know, I've driven around the country quite a bit, just with me and one other person or two other people, and had no problems. And when the Afghans learn that you're an American, it's tea time. You know, they want to sit down and have tea and talk. So, I mean, it's not as if everybody here wants to hurt you.
That's good to hear. Now, for my listeners, you're not affiliated with any major news organization. Is that correct? You do this independently.
Completely independently. A lot of major organizations will run my work from time to time. You know, if you can think it up, they probably have run it at some point. But I'm completely independent, reader-financed. Readers support my work by giving donations. I don't accept any advertisement. You know, in that way I can remain free to tell the truth as I find it. And, you know, there's constant influences. If you had big advertisers, you know, people would try to muscle and get their side of the story out or things that would benefit them. That's just natural. The way I try to avoid that natural pitfall is to just stay completely independent.
Yeah, that's great. That's wonderful that there's no editorial restrictions on what you want to write, and you get to put the story across as you see it, which is very rare in today's journalistic world. It's very rare. One of the listeners wanted to know about the opium trade in Afghanistan. How important it is for the Taliban? How big is it? How is it mainstream there? Is it just something that every little farmer does, or what's the deal with that?
It depends on which part of Afghanistan you're talking about. Down here in the south, for instance, in Kandahar province, in Helmand province, Uruzgan province, and a couple of other places, it is a widespread crop that's grown. Mostly it's just small, you know, people have said that we should just use crop dusters and spray it. That wouldn't really work because most of the patches are quite small. We're like, you know, one family might be growing it here, but their neighbor might be growing corn, and they're really close to each other. So, I mean, if you did the crop dusting thing, you would wipe out people's corn, you know, and many other, products. So most of the patches are quite small, but there's a lot of those very small patches. So it ends up being a huge part of the economy here, up to 50%, depends on which, you know, statistics that you read. I don't really believe any of them, but they're all pretty dire insofar as the opium trade also funds part of the insurgency because, you know, illicit activities like this tend to thrive in chaos. And so, you know, it's a fact, actually, that some of the big opium producers further up the food chain, not the small farmers, but they actually do fund Taliban and use them to sow chaos that helps them thrive and make money.
Sure. Okay. I have a question regarding... Now, I understand you were a former Green Beret. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Now, when you're out with troops now and you're embedded as a reporter... Do you feel naked sometimes when you come under fire or anything, not being able to shoot back or not being able to? Because I'm sure your instinct as a Green Beret is to want to fight back.
Well, every time you need a weapon, they're laying all over the ground anyway, so that's pretty much a fact. So I've only had to fight back once, and that was back in Iraq. So, but usually, you know, the troops do a pretty good job of fighting back. And I just, you know, basically take cover or go with them or follow them or take photos, that sort of thing.
Sure.
But they do a very good job of fighting back.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The best trained troops in the world. We're running out of time here. I wanted to thank you a whole lot for calling. I know the satellite phone time is very expensive. Can we get you back on sometime, Michael?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I'll be here all year, so it's pretty easy to make contact. Actually,
okay.
Easier to get a hold of me in Afghanistan than it is when I'm in the United States.
Oh, is okay. Okay. Next time you come on, I want to ask you about that time when you had to fight in Iraq, and I want to also ask you next time about your arrest or your detainment when you came in a month or two ago here in the United States, if that's all right with you.
Sure. Yeah. That,
okay.
What a mess that was. Okay. All right. Anytime. I'm easy to reach. You know how to get a hold of me.
I do. I want to thank you a whole lot for being on our show, Radio Free ARFCOM, and watch your back out there. Take care.
I will. Have a good day.
All right, you too. That was Michael Yon live from Afghanistan giving us a sit rep straight from the war zone. The guy's a great reporter, and a guy like that that can report without any advertisers or editorial restriction is it's good to hear from him. Check out his website, www.michaelyon-online.com. Right now, we're going to go into a new segment called Get to Know. I hope you guys enjoy it, and we can get a lot more of these on in the coming weeks. Okay, this week we're starting a new segment here on Radio Free ARFCOM. It's called Get to Know. And what it is we get a different member, a site member, team member, a different moderator or staff member, sometimes an industry partner, and we ask them 20 questions just so everybody can get to know them a little bit better. And our first victim for this segment is Sherrick. Hey, Sherrick, can you hear me?
I sure can.
Outstanding. Okay, are you ready to get started?
Yes, I am.
You are one of the most famous or infamous personalities on ARFCOM, depending on how you look at it, so this should be fun. Okay, here we go. Question number one, 9mm or 45?
Yeah, I like them both, but if I have to choose, I'll take round count oversize.
9mm it is. Okay, the big one, beans or no beans?
Once again, I like them both, and it depends. If it's straight chili, I like beans in it. If I'm putting on a hot dog, no beans.
Oh, okay, so kind of I'll give you that waffle answer. I'll give you that.
It's a situational question.
Oh, okay. Married, single, or in a relationship?
Happily married.
Happily married, okay. Does your wife support or participate in your firearms enthusiasm and activity?
She likes to shoot a little bit. She doesn't like guns as much as me, of course, but she fully supports what I do. She has no problem with my guns.
That sounds like a happy marriage. What do you do for a living, Sherrick?
I'm a police officer. I teach part-time, and I own my own rental business.
Oh, wow. Busy man. What is your drink of choice?
Crown and Coke. Crown and Diet Coke.
Crown and Diet Coke. Okay. Who is your favorite poster on ARFCOM?
My favorite poster probably is Old Painless.
Old Painless. Yes, he is the crowd favorite. Who is your least favorite poster on ARFCOM?
The seminar posters that are liberal trolls that will just sign up just to throw out some trollish type questions and then leave. They'll get banned eventually.
The infamous low count troll. Yes, we have.
Yes, the low count trolls. I don't like those. I think everybody otherwise has a lot to contribute, whether I agree with them or not.
Who is your favorite mod or staff member on ARFCOM?
I like both 82nd and DK Prof.
Okay. Oh, good. Oh, good. Two good choices. If you could live anywhere other than where you live now, where would that be?
Rockwall, Texas or Frisco, Texas?
Texas. Okay.
Right outside of Dallas. Two great towns right outside of Dallas.
Okay. What is your favorite firearm that you own?
I have several. I can't choose one. So I like my USP for a pistol, USP 40. I have a World War I 1911. That's not re-arsenal, so it's a true World War I 1911 I love. I have a Chinese AK that, believe it or not, shoots as accurately as any of my ARs.
Oh, wow.
And I love my M1 Grand, and I also love the Swiss K-31. So I really, if I was going to a desert island, I'd take all of them.
Okay. Let's see. Did I ask you Glock 1911 or something else?
Again, I like them both. They both have their uses. If I had to carry something, I'd go round count over size. Or if they were both 45s, I'll take round count.
Okay.
So I have to go with the Glock on that one.
Fair enough. if you could have any one firearm that's legal for you to own that you do not currently own, what would that be?
Class 3 or not Class 3?
If Class 3 is legal for you, then it can be Class 3.
M249.
M249. Ooh, good one. When was the last time you went shooting?
About a week ago. Last Friday morning, I believe, yeah.
Okay, good. So you don't just talk the talk, you walk the walk. Have you ever met a fellow ARFCOMer in real life?
Not in person. Over the phone, yes.
Okay.
Not including Paul.
Okay. What was your impression of them over the phone? You don't have to say who it was.
Kind of
just what was your impression?
He was kind of a stalker.
Let's
put it this way. I never called him. He always called me.
Oh, okay. Okay. Fair enough. What is your favorite non-GD section of the boards?
CNR section and the equipment exchange before it got messed up.
CNR and the equipment exchange, and just so everybody knows, they are working on getting a new equipment exchange up.
Yes, I know. It's just the traffic is nowhere near where it used to be.
What was the first firearm you ever shot?
A 10-22.
A 10-22. How old were you then?
12.
Oh, okay.
11 or 12.
Started young. And
it was my big brother's.
Oh, okay. Have you ever gotten rid of a firearm and regretted it?
I've never sold one that I actually regret selling. I haven't sold very many, but there's a few I've sold. I don't miss them. The one I do regret, I had a Smith & Wesson Model 59 that I used as a truck gun, and I got stolen out of my truck on Christmas. And I do regret that. So I don't keep truck guns anymore.
Oh, okay. That sucks. Getting firearms stolen is the worst. And last question of the day for you. If you were elected president of the United States, what would be the first thing you did?
Lower taxes, cut spending.
Good answer. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Sherrick on our first Get to Know segment. And we'll probably have two or three more of these every week for you. So tune in here at Radio Free ARFCOM. Thank you, Sherrick.
I appreciate it.
I
got to
go live right now. Let me call you after the show. And we're back. That was our little interesting get-to-know segment. Hopefully I can get a couple more of you willing to go on next week, and I'll be contacting you through instant message. I tried to contact a few people, but some people didn't want to do it, and some people I couldn't get hold of. Our schedules didn't work out, but we'll try to get a couple more people on next week. Right now, we're going to take a peek into the mind of Piccolo. Piccolo, are you there?
Yeah. What's up? John?
We have you on live. This is such an honor.
Well, I don't know what kind of an honor I'd call it, but you got me on live, I guess.
So what interesting happened today, Piccolo?
I got called into work early. I'm actually sitting on board right now with my feet up on the galley table. Fortunately, we don't have anything going immediately, so I've got a little bit of time here. Although I did sit there earlier today, I saw a little sheet metal. We've had a lot of snow in this area, and the roads were slick, and I saw a little sheet metal bending in the parking lot.
A little fender bender action, huh?
Yeah, and actually the funny part about it was when they both got out and one guy started insisting on calling a policeman. Well, you knew the police were pretty busy with other things. And he looked at me as I was walking past, and he says, "What's the number for 9/11? And I told him, pointed to a store. I said, "I don't know, but I'll bet you they've got a telephone book in there." And it was funny. He got about 6 or 7 steps before he figured it out. Go ahead.
I want you to tell everybody, Piccolo, about how you managed to work free batteries and tires for your car for about 10 years. Can you tell everyone that story?
Yeah, okay. Well, what happened?
You're a little pot, Piccolo. Go ahead.
Okay, the tire and brake store, it used to be Tire something or another, they had a phone number that was one digit off from mine. And every Saturday morning I'd get calls. Well, if they were an honest accident, I was pretty good about it. But if he called back within about 10 seconds, I knew he was stupid and had just punched redial. And, you know, making the same mistake twice. So I just sit there, acted like I was selling tires and brakes, and I tell them about this Moonlight Madness sale between 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. and sign them up for a 2:30 appointment, which is right after the bars close at 2, so you know he's probably half gassed. And if I got three or four of those on a weekend, I'd go down there and scatter a bunch of rocks on their parking lot. And sure enough, you'd get up Sunday morning, and sometimes you'd see that the windows were busted. So I just went down there one day. I said, you know, it happens, and hemmed and hawed a little bit. And then he just asked me what was going on, and I told him it was my phone number that was a digit off from his, and that I was the guy. I told him what I was doing. Well, he called me all kinds of nasty names, and I just kind of shook him down a little bit. I told him, well, I need new tires. I'll give you six months, respite for it. Okay. So the next thing I knew, I wasn't getting them free or anything like that, but I was sure getting a healthy discount on tires and brakes for years just for not sitting there and answering the phone like a smartass.
Somehow I'm not surprised.
It was a pretty good deal.
Now, one incident that you're famous for, and there were several incidents involving your Seeing Eye Cat, but can you talk about the first time you went out with that Seeing Eye Cat?
Actually, the first time I went out with them was just when I started walking them. And it was actually, one of the neighbors said something, and basically I just put the sunglasses and cane on when I went walking through the neighborhood just to sit there and give one of the neighbors the business back, because the first time it was a sunny day and I had sunglasses on, and somebody said, what is he, your Seeing Eye Cat, because they'd never seen a cat walking on a leash before. And that was the first time. And I guess the first time I wrote about it was actually the night I took him to the movies.
Oh, go ahead, tell us that one.
Oh, there was a movie, I think it was Ghost Ship. Anyway, what was happening, I don't know what was going on, but I think my wife and I were having a disagreement or something, and I headed into the basement, which, you know, the man cave, and the cat basically beat me down there, and we decided to sneak out and go to the movies. So I just sat there, and, well, I had this handicap sticker in my glove box from when I had a busted foot. So I just sat there, grabbed the cat, put him on his leash, and grabbed the cane and the sunglasses. We pull up to the movies. Well, I park in the handicap spot, hung the handicap thing up from my busted foot there, and I get out. And I sit there, hey, 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 and I hear, you know, I heard somebody, actually, I saw him. And it was this couple that was going into the movies, and I asked him, hey, can you lead me into the movies? And she had seen me getting out of the car driving, so she knew something was up, and she thought it was really funny because guy gave me his arm, and I've got his arm in one hand, the leash and the cane in the other. He lets me in there. Oh, sure enough, I go up there. I pay for my ticket and stuff. I got the usher to seat me, let me bring the cat in. I sat there with a thing of popcorn, the cat on my lap, and watched the movie. Nobody ever hassled me.
Oh, man. I wish I could have just seen the Seeing Eye Cat live just one time. Just one time. Hey, Piccolo, we're out of time for today. We're going to have you on next week. We're going to get a couple more stories from you, if that's okay.
Okie doke. Hey, take care. Have a good one.
Thanks, Piccolo. You too. And that was peek into the mind of the infamous Piccolo. That's all the time we have today for Radio Free ARFCOM. I want to let everyone know next week we're going to start off. Our first guest will be Joe DeBurgley, our NRA board member, and we've got some serious right to keep and bear arms issues that he's going to go over with us. We ran out of time today, but I didn't want to have him on for a short segment. I want to have him on for as much time as he needs to talk about these issues. I wanted to thank Merrill for posting all the links and the pictures on during the discussion, Merrill. I really do appreciate that. I wanted to let you know that. God bless America, everybody. Have a good week, and I'll see you next Monday on Radio Free ARFCOM.
The chair is against the wall. The chair is against the wall. John has a long mustache. John has a long mustache.